Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to 1A. Before we dive in, we'd like to know better who's listening to the show and how you're using podcasts. So please help us out by taking a short anonymous survey at npr.org/podcast survey. It takes less than 10 minutes and it would really help us out. Again, that's npr.org/podcast survey, all one word. Okay, thanks for listening. On to the show. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. How do you rebuild your life after it suddenly ends? Jason Weems faced that dilemma far more literally than he probably would have ever wanted. Weems was performing a comedy set in Philadelphia when an asthma attack stopped his heart for 5 minutes, but he survived to tell the tale and even to joke about it on stage.
16 hours, man, is a long-ass time to not remember what happened. I don't remember the ambulance ride. I don't remember anything. I just remember waking up in the hospital. You know what you can do in 16 hours? 16 hours, you can watch all the Lord of the Rings back to back. Still have 6.5 hours left. Or you can watch Aretha Franklin's funeral one damn time. Just once. Yo, Aretha Franklin's funeral was long as hell. Aretha Franklin's funeral was so long, people attending the funeral died at the funeral. They had smaller funerals at Aretha Franklin's funeral.
His near-death experience forced him to reckon with his life and with his dreams of being a career comedian. And some of you have had similar kinds of reckonings in your life. Here's some of what you left in our inbox.
Hey, my name is Bonnie, and I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. I am an amputee. I lost my leg upon impact in a car accident about 15 years ago. I am very active. I do Tai Chi, I teach dance, and I make a lot of art. I also volunteer in my community. People are often telling me what an inspiration I am, and while I think that's really great, I'm here to say that we all have something that we need to overcome during our lifetimes. Mine is just a little bit more visible.
My name is Bruce Jacobson, and I'm from San Diego, California. At the age of 40, my wife got a very aggressive form of breast cancer and died shortly thereafter. I have at the time, my son was 5 years old, and he asked me, "Daddy, Mommy used to take me to school every day and pick me up, and now she's not around. How long are you going to be around?" And so I decided to dedicate my life to him, knowing that I couldn't do anything about him losing his mother, but I could do something about him losing his father.
My name is Janet. About 25 years ago, I survived a gunshot to the chest. It made me feel very grateful to have survived that, and I reevaluated my life. I was an actress at the time, and I realized that if I had only left a drawer full of fabulous reviews, that would not have been enough to leave. So I made a decision that the most important thing to do with the rest of my life was to have a family. I had two beautiful boys who are now in medical school, and I feel like I made the right decision. I'm still involved in theater, but I have a children's theater company, and I'm very happy that my life made a different turn.
Wow. Thank you all for sharing your stories. We'll hear more of them as the hour goes on. Jason Weems tells his story in the latest season of the podcast First Day Back, and he joins us now in studio, alive and well. Jason, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much. Hi, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm on the right side of the dirt, so I feel right.
on the top side.
I'm on the top side. Once you get on the underside, that's the issue.
Yeah, well, we kept you from the underside.
Right, we kept you on the underside, absolutely.
Now, your story was featured in First Day Back, which is a podcast by Scripps and Stitcher, hosted by Tali Abacasis. The whole first episode is about your asthma attack, and I think that's the best place to start. It happened in May of 2017, right around Memorial Day.
Yes.
That was the night of the attack. Tell us what was going on before the attack happened.
It was a regular day. I took my kids to school. I picked them up, did homework, made dinner. My wife came home from work. We swapped out. You know, I tagged out, ran, jumped in the car, drove to Philly. It was a regular, you know, no traffic. It felt good. You know, I get into the venue. I'm sitting in the back watching other comics go up. And then the booker says, "Hey, you're going up in 2 minutes." I get a glass of red wine, take a sip of it, get on stage. 2 minutes into the set, I feel like somebody just grabbed my airways. And it wasn't even a gradual buildup. It was just like literally having the breath snatched out of your body. And it was the first time in stand-up. I've been doing comedy 12 years now. It was the first time I'd ever said good night and not finished my set. You know, it's nights where you get booed. It's nights where, you know, someone wants to come on stage and fight you, but you finish your set. You know, you're getting paid for 45 minutes. You do 45 minutes. I was 2 minutes in of a 45-minute set. I said goodnight because I literally couldn't say anything else. Ran outside on the sidewalk on my hands and knees at this point, like gasping for air. And by the grace of God, there was a physician's assistant in the crowd, just an audience member, whose boyfriend said, hey, you should go check on that guy. And she came out and got me inside, and I coded right in the venue. From what I'm told, you know, I turned blue, eyes in the back of my head, no heartbeat or pulse for 5 minutes.
What got you back on stage?
It was what I was put here to do. Like, it's, there's no other thing that resonates with me the way that comedy does. I see the world in jokes. When a tragedy happens, you know, after the initial shock of hearing what it is, my mind does start to pick apart the pieces that may relate with people, what people might, you know, connect with. After I died, I woke up in the hospital bed in Philly 16 hours later, and one of the first things I did was start scribbling down jokes about this thing. Some of it's, I'm sure it's a coping mechanism, but it's just also the way that I make sense of things.
So your comedy from the beginning was kind of observational rather than like narrative storytelling? Or a bit of both? Or
a bit of both, yeah. The best way I guess to describe my comedy now is I'm very organic. If you speak to anybody that sees me, you can see me on Tuesday, then see me on Wednesday, and it'll be a completely different hour. I move off the energy of the room. I move off the energy of the crowd. I, you know, and I was, as I'm sitting in the back of a room, I'm studying the audience as they walk in. I'm seeing who coughs loud. I'm seeing who keeps going to the bathroom. Because at some point on stage, all those little points are going to connect in my mind, and I weave this story that's specific to this crowd. And then they leave out feeling like they just saw magic because it's,
go ahead. Because.
Yeah, because it happens in the room. So most of my jokes aren't scripted. Most of my thing, when I go up on stage, I try to go up as blank as possible. And then I just leave room for God and inspiration. And I just start riffing.
So so when you were on stage that night in Philadelphia, you probably had a number of things you thought you were going to get to do.
Absolutely.
What's going through your head? What's going through your heart as you realize that you are in danger?
I'm thinking about my kids. I'm thinking about my wife. I'm in Philly. I'm 2 hours away from Baltimore. And she's none the wiser. Like, being a stand-up comic, it's nothing for me to get in the house at 2 o'clock in the morning. So if I'm out late, well, you know, she's not looking for me, or that there wouldn't be anything to alert her to know that something's wrong.
Apparently, there were comedians across the country who were, like, tweeting up a storm trying to get a hold of her.
Right. So what happened was, when I passed out and coded in the venue, my phone was locked, and they couldn't get in touch with my family. They didn't know who to call. Because, I mean, these are comics that I know, but they don't know my family personally and things like that. I'm out of town. So, yeah, the power of social media. They started tweeting, at, who knows, at Jay Weems Comedy's family. Also follow me at Jay Weems Comedy.
And you do, you talk a little bit more about your phone a little later. I want to play a piece of that a little more. But before we have to pause, you've lived with asthma for most of your life. Had anything like this ever happened to you before?
Not this aggressive and not this dire. I dealt with severe asthma all my childhood. I mean, I would miss, you know, almost 2 or 3 months of school at a time. And the teachers would be bringing work to the hospital for me. Or my mother would go to the school and bring back a packet. And I would do it in the hospital bed. Somewhere around high school into college, it felt like it kind of almost went away. Like, I would have an inhaler in my pocket just as a safety blanket. But I would go, you know, 2-3 months without even puffing it. So I kind of felt like I was out of the woods.
We'll continue our conversation with comedian Jason Weems in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, NCR. Let's face it. As a small business owner, you wear so many hats every day, you rarely have time to focus on activities that drive profitability or bring in new customers. That's why you need a point of sale that does more. NCR Silver delivers simple-to-understand analysis and business-building tools like email marketing and loyalty, so you can get back to focusing on your customers. NCR Silver. Search NCR Silver.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Ask Me Another. For the entire month of April, we're celebrating women in comedy. And we're kicking things off with Russian Doll actor Greta Lee and co-creator Leslie Headland. And later in the month, we'll be joined by Retta from NBC's Parks and Recreation and Good Girls. And many more. Start listening this Friday.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing coming back from a life-changing event with comedian Jason Weems, the subject of the latest season of the podcast, First Day Back. Weems found himself on the other side of a near-death experience, or maybe a through-death experience, after an asthma attack. Let's pick back up, Jason, with this attack. Do you remember anything from it?
I remember up until I passed out. I remember the tightness on stage. I remember running outside. I remember the woman's voice over my shoulder. I remember being sat down in a corner and then trying to give me some water. And then that point was when, you know, the lights went off. And from what I'm told, you know, I fell. I hit my head pretty hard on the ground. And then the doctor who was there, you know, jumped in and just started doing chest compressions like crazy. And she's screaming like, this guy doesn't have a heartbeat. At that point, the bartender, from what I understand, jumped in. You know, called the ambulance. You know, comics are out in the middle of the street jumping up and down, you know, waving, you know, the medics in. You know, luckily they got in there. They, you know, cut my shirt off, you know, did everything they had to do. And by the grace of God, you know, I woke back up in the hospital. So thankful to be here.
You must have been pretty shook when you came to in the hospital.
I was shook. So I woke up a couple of times. The first time I woke up, I was in a CT scan. And they had a tube in my throat. They had a ventilator in. So when I woke up, I freaked out, feeling like I was choking. And I guess I went to yank the tube, and they had to restrain me. So then I remember passing out again. So I think they sedated me at that point. So when I woke back up the second or third time, now I have a ventilator. I'm in hand restraints. I don't know what's happened. No one's coming in or out of the room. I'm seeing, you know, doctors walk past the door, but no one's saying anything. The best way I describe it, it felt like a Get Out moment. Like if you've seen the movie Get Out,
yeah.
It was that, just being frozen. And
in the sunken place.
In the sunken place. And I didn't know what was real. I was trying to remember, like, okay, am I a comedian? Like, is everything of my life that I remember, was that like a dream? It just felt like reality was upside down. It wasn't until my wife got there, that's when I was finally able to kind of like reconnect to reality.
And what was that? That reconnection must have been.
Yeah. So
what was that?
I passed out, went back to sleep in the hospital room. You know, I've got these hand restraints on. And I woke back up and I could see out of the corner of my eye a kind of a figure in this corner of the room. And then I could hear her voice. Baby, I'm here. Baby, I'm here. Baby, I'm here. So then she kind of, you know, gets in front of me enough so that I can see her. And it was just a real sobering moment. It was just one of those moments of seeing what you could have lost, seeing right in front of you, you know, what if they didn't get me back? You know, now she's in a completely different space. Now my kids are fatherless. Now she's a widow. And that was the scariest part of it for me. I've got three little boys at home, three beautiful little boys, a 7-year-old son, twin 5-year-olds.
Twin
5-year-old boys. Yeah, shout out to Emery Amir Weems, Liam Nasir Weems, and the biggest, Sean Christopher Weems, in school right now. Beautiful boys. So, yeah, it that's what I guess scares me the most about all of this. You know,
that must have also raised questions for you about your career. You know, I mean, you and I are both in performance careers,
right?
Right, and
right.
So you have to be able to go out there and know to a certain extent that you will get in, get through, and get out flawlessly.
Absolutely.
At some point.
Right.
So that must have raised some questions for you foundationally as to whether your health would allow you to do a performance-based career.
Absolutely. The month following the attack, so from May 3rd until, I didn't perform again until June. I took the entire month off just to kind of get my head back together. I was contemplating quitting, you know, or finding a new way to do it. Like maybe, you know, maybe I don't do comedy on stage. Maybe I, you know, kind of funnel this more towards writing or towards, you know, a podcast or whatever, you know, just a different artery to get the jokes out. You know, I've got tons of ideas for books that I'm working on. So it's, I was looking at different avenues that wouldn't take me out of the house as much, that wouldn't put the stress of travel on my body. Because a lot of that's that, you know, with comedians, we're sleeping in airports. I've slept in cars underneath bridges in Chicago because, you know, you only make a certain amount of money from the gig and you don't want to burn it all in a hotel. So you know, you try to pocket it how you can. So health wise, just the travel, it's a grind on your body. And all that was a factor in, you know, do I still want to do this? But beyond that, I keep getting pulled back to the stage. Every day I'll write 20 to 25 jokes every day, and they come to me so quickly, I don't get a chance to perform them as quickly as I can write them. So if I write a joke, if I write 25 jokes on Tuesday and I don't have a show Tuesday night, then Wednesday I write 25 more, but then I've got to perform those fresh ones while I'm still emotionally connected to them.
Was that one of the things that helped you start to regain a sense of normalcy? Was like, when did, if there is such a sense of normalcy after that, when did the new normal begin to settle in?
After I got back on stage for the first time.
Where was that performance?
It was at a good buddy of mine in Baltimore, Maryland, where I'm from, my hometown. Shout out to B-More. a guy named Pierre Benoit, who actually opened for me on the special that I just recorded. He's an amazing artist. He owns an art space called Exit the Apple. He's from New York originally. Him and his wife, you know, left New York, henceforth Exit the Apple.
Right.
And they had a pop-up show, so it was kind of a variety type. They had some poets and some singers, and it's right around the corner from my house. So he said, you know, come on through. It's going to be, you know, some good people, some good food. You know, just come out. And I think it was just more of a way to try to pull me out of my cocoon, because pretty much for the entire month of May, I kind of turned into kind of a hermit. I was in the house. I wasn't returning text messages. You know, people, you know, text me, do you need me to come by, bring you anything? But I wasn't really ready to face the world yet. Because I still felt like I was dead, if that makes sense. Like, after knowing that you died, like, your skin looks different to you. You know, knowing that blood wasn't pumping through your body for a certain amount of time. I would get out of the shower and I'd be looking at my face, and it would feel like it was like a mask. So mentally, yeah, it was tons of weight that I still deal with.
So you were literally kind of disembodied from yourself.
Absolutely. And I still feel that at times. Yeah, it's a sobering thing to know that you weren't here. Like, not that you were close to not being here. Like, you literally weren't. There were 5 minutes that passed on this earth that you weren't a part of. And the fact that the world just keeps spinning. Like, you think that, you know, when your little cog falls out, that the whole wheel stops, but it just keeps moving. To know that May 4th would have still came last in 2017, whether I woke up or not. So that's a kind of thing that's still kind of that I wrestle with in my mind.
You talk in the podcast, Jason, in the podcast First Day Back, about beginning to write material about your experience. And here's another quick example. We heard some at the top. Here's one more quick example.
I feel like 50 Cent when he dropped his first album. Like, 50 got shot 9 times. I died of an asthma attack. Pretty much the same thing in the streets.
That's part of the first episode of this season of First Day Back. What made you decide to tell your story for the podcast?
They sent me a message saying that they had heard of my story and explained what the podcast was about. They said just all about, you know, people getting their life back after a life-altering event, which fit my thing, you know, to a T. At the time, I was a little reluctant. I wasn't sure if I was ready to tell it or if I even knew how to tell it, because it was a thing of when you're out for 16 hours, like, I don't even have firsthand information. At this point, I'm saying, oh, this is what the bartender said that happened. This is what this person said that happened. So for me, being the comic, being the type of person I am, I like to operate off my own accord and from my own, you know, mental capacity. So not feeling like I know all the facts makes it difficult for me to really tell the story in a way that I would be comfortable. Then after looking at it, I was like, you know, let's give it a shot. And it actually acted as therapy for me. I did so many hours of audio for this podcast, that, I mean, I covered everything. And there were different points in times where things would come out and it would make me say, oh, that's why I feel this way, or that's why I'm reacting this way. So it was a blessing. It was a great way to purge a lot of the feelings, to reconcile with a lot of the feelings. And then it was a great way for me to work to the special. It was a great way to find the funny.
Michael emailed, does your guest feel like the effect of his near-death experiences will diminish over time? As a former soldier who has had many near-death experiences, I feel like the profundity of these experiences wanes. Jason?
I don't know. I still feel like I'm not out of the woods yet. I've had a couple of severe attacks past this one. One in 2018, one just a few months ago, maybe November. It was actually during the podcast because, you know, they wrapped that like the end in middle of December. And that was a part that was documented in it. I had this crazy aggressive attack at home one night and, you know, the kids are upstairs sleeping. And it's that whole scramble of, do we wake all the kids up and throw everybody in the car? Do we call ambulances? And I sat there on the couch and fought literally for every breath for, you know, what felt like an hour, to the point that you're just exhausted. So I don't know if it'll ever decline. I hope that it does. It's a scary way to live.
I want to talk more about how you worked through that and got to the point where you could perform the special. When we continue with Jason Weems, we'll get to some more of your incredible stories, and we'll play you a clip from the comedy special, that little bit about the phone, having his phone. We got to talk about the phone in just a minute. Stay close.
Abby Jacobson was terrified to write a book.
I pitched it with, like, trembling hands.
Really?
To make myself do this because it scared the shit out of me.
The stories behind the celebrity. Every Tuesday on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Back now to our conversation with comedian Jason Weems. His new comedy special is called Unknown. We'll get to a clip from that in just a moment. But first, let me get to a few more of your incredible stories. Dave emailed, I am floored by today's show. 4 years ago, I was at the gym working out in between sales meetings, and the lights went out. I flew off the treadmill and hit my head and had no heartbeat. Miraculously, the local fire department was flushing a hydrant right outside the gym. They shocked me 4 times and thought I was dead. I woke up in the hospital with the fire department there in tears as I was their sales rep, and they recognized me. I have 2 kids and a wife at home. I left my very stressful job a few months later. Kay emailed, my husband says I'm like a cockroach. They keep throwing things at me and I survive. I survived cancer against the odds. I was then diagnosed with pulmonary arterial hypertension, which tried to kill me. It is progressive and terminal, and I coded in the hospital once and was end stage. I decided to go for the transplant, which I had, a bilateral lung transplant in January 2018. I did a walking 5K in May 2018. I work part-time, teach yoga, and I'm starting a community center to give back and pay it forward. Thank you all so much for these stories, and they're so kind of heartening and inspiring.
Right.
Where did you find inspiration? Where did you find encouragement, Jason, as you were in the process of figuring out what to do and how to put your life back together?
Just the fact that I'm here. Like, the amount of perspective that you receive from a situation like this is so immense. It makes you look at everything with almost like rose-colored glasses on. I mean, because the alternative is like one of these things of anything past May 3rd, 2017 for me is a bonus round. So if on May 4th I get a Comcast bill for $300 and I'm mad about it, the alternative is I'm dead.
Right.
So
right.
I'll call customer service.
You won't be mad or you won't be dead.
Right. So, I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to. If you want to just make it kind of, you know, black and white, like, it's life is hard, but it's also beautiful. So I'd rather be here for both.
Now, was that something that you learned as a result of this, or is that something that was affirmed for you as a result of this? Like, was that a change in your
right.
in your viewpoint?
No, it affirmed it for me. I've always considered myself a pretty optimistic person. But anybody with kids and, you know, a family, they know what it feels like to live for somebody else. So, you know, I've got a stake in Three Little Lives, and I'm a be around to see it. So it just makes you thankful.
With regards to those Three Little Lives, let me play a clip from First Day Back about your kids. Listen.
Jason is like the boys' team captain. Every single day when they leave the house, they have this ritual. They huddle around and put their hands in the middle of a circle, superhero style.
Hands in. I'm smart.
I'm smart.
I'm strong. Nobody's better than me.
Nobody's better than me.
I'm the best.
I'm best.
Team Wings.
That is unnecessarily cute.
Did you hear one of them say Team Wilson? Just completely disrespecting my last name.
Yeah, whose family are you rooting for?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know who paid the bills in this house.
Absolutely.
Is there somebody we need to know about?
Absolutely.
Talk about how this affected your relationship with your kids. You have one son who is asthmatic, right?
Right. So our oldest son, Sean, he's 7, not asthmatic. Then we have the twins, Liam and Emery. Liam would be considered the middle child, I guess. He was born a minute earlier. And he's the one with severe asthma. And I could see all of the things that I had when I was little, all of the same warning signs and all the same characteristics. He would do certain things, and I would see him kind of like scratch his chest. And, you know, it's a feeling when you start to have an attack, when you start to wheeze, you almost kind of, you're trying to it feels like you're trying to scratch the airway through your skin. Anybody that has asthma knows that feeling. It's like a tickle that you can't reach. And that, for me, typically indicates an attack is coming. And I would see him doing it, and it would break my heart, because you see this tiny little boy, you know, 3 years old, 4 years old, and he's trying to run with his brothers, but he can't keep up because every 3 steps now he's wheezing. So it was really, for me and my wife, it was a concern, because we felt like it was going to steal his childhood. So it was a thing of, we were very aggressive in trying to find, you know, specialists and everything else, and we kept striking out. And then we finally found this guy, Dr. Sexaria, in Baltimore, and everyone was like, this guy's like a miracle worker. And we took him with high hopes, but also, you know, bracing ourselves for disappointment again. And literally from the time he saw Dr. Sexaria up until now, he's maybe had 3 tiny bouts of stuff, but before he was having 3 attacks a day.
I want to acknowledge we're getting a lot of stories from several of you about different kinds of life-altering experiences, some of which have nothing to do with health, and some of which are incredibly dramatic. Here is what Angelita left in our inbox.
Hi, this is Angelita. I was kidnapped for 32 days in the jungle of Colombia. That was when I was turned 22. I was working as an engineer, and I was captured because I was working providing water projects for people that need it. And that changed my life, because it provided me a perspective of how in 1 second I was close to death so many times between crossfire and all of these. And you really have to be thankful for every day that you wake up alive and in a safe place with your people around it.
Wow. Angelita, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Let me get to some of the comedy special now, Jason. Unknown, your first major stand-up special, trying to kind of raise your profile a little further to that national audience. Here is a clip from Unknown.
So my wife was like, you know, that's a problem. You know, you travel a lot. I need people to be able to get in touch with me if something happens to you. So she's like, we can do one of 2 things. You can either leave your phone unlocked. Or you can get a medical alert bracelet. So I got this medical alert bracelet.
A clip from the comedy special Unknown. You ain't right.
I have fun up there. It's a good time. I try to find the joy in in everything. You got to. You got to keep laughing to keep from crying, right?
So you step off the stage after doing Unknown,
yeah.
and what's going through your head, what's going through your heart when you stepped off the stage then?
It was a mix of gratitude for the amount of love that was in the room, and then my inner editor kicked in. You know, anybody that's an artist, you're thinking about, oh, I think I flubbed that word. I didn't hit that line the way it typically does. That joke didn't hit. So everybody's coming up to me and hugging me. Oh, man, you killed that. Hugging me and picking me up and all this type of stuff. And I'm in my head and people are like, are you okay? And I'm just like literally thinking about everything. And I think it was just such a heavy mental lift. It was a year leading up to this. It was a lot of the podcast recordings. It was trying to work out this death material. It was, you know, trying to just get comfortable being on stage again. So by the time I got to the special, I think I was just exhausted. You know, once I said goodnight, it was like saying, okay, I'm done with this now. So it was just like I was able to finally put down these weights that I'd been carrying for this year for, you know, for different purposes.
Are you looking forward at all to not talking about the death experience, to joking about other things?
Absolutely. That was the thing for me. After December 1st, I was able to almost like clear my cachet. I was able to just, you know, shed all of that. So from January 1 forward, you know, this first 4 months now has just been, it's the fun part for comics. It's building new material. So we hate it when it gets to the part where, you know, we told this joke so many times. You know where the audience is going to laugh. You know where the silence is. After a while, it becomes so scripted that it's boring. And that's when you typically record the special, when it's that good. So this new stuff is fun for me. It's a playground.
Nicole emailed, thank you for today's show. I am newly trying to free myself from domestic violence. I have lost everything. A 22-year, quote-unquote, relationship. My abuser's family, my own parent, is not supportive. I have housing instability. Everything I once knew is gone. I hope other survivors are listening in the midst of so much isolation, hearing we stand together out of the shadows. Resilience shining through in this program is a gift. Thank you so much for lifting me up today. I lift you all up with much gratitude and hope. Nicole, thank you for that. I'm so sorry for what you're going through. I wish you all the best in rebuilding your life from domestic violence. We're low on time, but I did want to read this email from Kay. Kay writes, thank you for having this show. I had a severe accident in October where I broke many ribs, clavicle, and pelvis. I was run over by my own truck. While it seems silly now, it was a pretty scary situation, and I'm not sure if I've even remotely dealt with it. Everyone else is saying I could be dead. I know we're low on time, but I feel like when I'd hear that kind of story, I'd be like, oh my goodness.
Right.
There's a part of my brain that wants to give me permission to go, how you get run over?
Right.
By your own
truck.
What? How did...
It's been a couple of the stories that have made me say,
Right. And I know we got to go in a second, but I feel like part of your story, and correct me if I'm wrong, is almost giving yourself permission to laugh at the calamities in your life.
I think so. Because some of this stuff literally, like you said, when you describe it, it sounds so ridiculous that it's funny because it's absurd. It's like, really? All of that happened? It's like, I fell down the steps and a turtle bit me on my neck. And then then I got septus. Like, what happened? It's like these crazy...
What did you say to the turtle?
Absolutely. It's like Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events.
Pretty much.
Just after one thing after another. You literally got to laugh at this stuff. And I feel like that's how the best way just to approach life. I mean, it's more fun that way at least.
Comedian Jason Weems from Baltimore, Maryland. His story is featured in this season of the podcast First Day Back. His new comedy special is called Unknown. Jason, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for talking
to us. Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate it.
This conversation was produced by Bianca Martin and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You can learn more about them and the rest of our team online at theoneA.org/staff. And again, please, please, please remember to fill out that short podcast survey. It's online at npr.org/podcast survey, all one word. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.